Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate you hearing my bill today, Senate Bill 512. I know that you and the other two committee members that are here today had the opportunity to hear my presentation at our November caucus. And I do have ultimately some changes that I will put forward, having had input from the Ethics Commission. But the substance of the bill is markedly unchanged since that early time in November. I explained to you then, I'll explain now, is that this bill was the culmination of a tremendous amount of work and input. My staff worked extremely hard in the off months and putting together this bill. We sought out input from people who had previously served in the Ethics Commission, people who have been involved in one way or the other as lobbyists, as political consultants, and quite frankly, as people who know how to get around Missouri's ethics laws today in such a way as to influence the previous General Assembly. This bill too, the mission behind this bill, and ethics is a broad term, is to focus explicitly on those in office, and in addition, those very near to those in office, and to severely restrict and or mandate that they disclose their actions more explicitly. And in addition to input from all of those other groups I previously mentioned, I also borrowed, and I can't recommend enough, the New York Times bestseller that came out in November, the book Extortion by Peter Schweitzer. And it was an extraordinary read, and I know it focused on the federal level, but I can't recommend the book enough. I think some of what is in that book applies at the state level as well. I'll go as quick as I can. I know you have a busy calendar, and I know some of these are ideas you have heard in previous bills. So very quickly, you have this outline, and I'm going to follow this outline. You should all have that. When it comes to elected officials, first, to focus on elected officials, my bill would require a 3-year cooling off period. The logic behind that, they wouldn't be able to, the General Assembly immediately after would not be impacted. It would be the one thereafter. So it would be longer than, I know other bills are 2-year cooling off period. It also would require a cooling off period for elected officials to serve as a paid political consultant. It would preclude or prohibit members of the General Assembly from acting as local government lobbyists while in office, and that in fact happens, where you're here and you're at the same time lobbying a local government entity. Specific again to elected officials with respect to lobbying gifts, this would outlaw all lobbying gifts. Oh, and before I drop here, the ban on lobbying would not prevent any of us from lobbying for a non-for-profit entity in an unpaid way, so we could lobby for causes. Lobbying gifts would be done away with, with the exception a commemorative item, if you got a plaque or award, that wouldn't have to happen. The way mechanically this would work is it would also mandate, though, that lobbyists continue to report if they inadvertently expend money to entertain you, and then our obligation would be to check the monthly website and to make reimbursement to the entity. What's different about this bill, it is not part of any other bill that I can understand, and this came a lot from the book Extortion, was we would actually focus on the staff themselves. Okay, so as we all know, we rely very heavily on our staff, and this would keep a staff member from lobbying for a 1-year period. There'd be a 1-year cooling off period before they would be able to become a paid lobbyist. We all know how much influence they have over us, and again, the idea would be to separate a certain period of time between their time influencing us and then being paid to influence us. I too would add a financial disclosure requirement for staff. This hasn't happened before, and I also failed to mention that I would require a second financial disclosure for elected officials. I find our financial disclosure process to be very lacking. The way the law is written today, all it requires is that on December 31st, we disclose our financial interest in any publicly traded companies of greater than $10,000 in value, but that's just for that one day. So if, for example, the day after that one day, we decided to make a huge investment in a publicly traded company that had legislation pending before this body, that is not required to be disclosed, that holding, ever, if we were to liquidate that holding prior to next December 31st. So this would essentially make all of us as elected officials do a personal financial disclosure twice, once at the beginning of session, essentially once at the end of session. It would require our staffers to make just the one annual financial disclosure. We would expand the requirements for lobbyists. So current law requires a person whose primary source of employment is a lobbyist, is registered with the MEC as a lobbyist. We'd extend, if you were an employee of a company and you dedicate more of your time, company pay time, down here trying to influence us, you too would have to register as a lobbyist. This is not meant to have an individual comes down on their own time, but we've all seen where certain corporations will marshal their employees and bring them down here week after week trying to influence us, and this would require that they too become registered as lobbyists. For the first time, if this law were to be enacted, we would actually require that paid political consultants register similar as lobbyists register. So for example, you'd have to lobby, you have to register with the MEC, you would describe who you are, you know, who your employees are and who you're lobbying for, who you're consulting to, and it would ban the practice of being both a lobbyist as well as a political consultant at the same time. And when I brought forward this idea, people said, well, what's the point of this whole thing? And quite frankly, I think that at times we're taking political advice and haven't done our homework to understand who, in fact, this political advisor may or may not be lobbying to or for, and it's just really to make the lines of demarcation very clear. You're a paid political consultant or you're a paid lobbyist, you're not both. In addition, I'm sorry to jump back on the personal financial disclosure forms for both the staff as well as all of us, quite frankly, when it comes to recognizing any limited partnerships, S-corps, things that we're involved in. Right now, we currently are only obligated to describe the fact that these exist. So it could be John Lamping LLC, and that's it. I don't have to describe what I do and how much income is generated or derived, and that would change. You would actually have to describe the LLC, and you would have to disclose, there'd be bands of how much income is earned by this LLC. If you have an LLC that does small consulting, you know, it would be kind of 0 to 1,000 or 0 to 2,000. But if you have an LLC that's set up and you're generating more than $200,000 or $300,000 in income, right now nobody has any way of knowing exactly what that LLC is doing. And I'll just be frank, this is a vehicle that people have gotten around campaign laws. If I wanted to corrupt somebody on this committee, the way I might do it is to have them set up an LLC and then hire their LLC to do something. So it would expand that. There are other aspects of the bill that are specific to other elected officials with respect to gubernatorial appointments. It's commonplace now when a governor makes an appointment that somebody does the research on what donations have been made prior to the appointment. This requires the governor to disclose that information, and then it prohibits a gubernatorial appointment to make contributions to the governor once they've achieved that appointment. The whole idea here is that the idea that somebody's appointments may or may not be for sale, this makes it very clear that it's understood beforehand if maybe there is a price tag on that committee, and then thereafter there's no liability to the person that is the appointee. There's a section that pertains to local government. It has to do with a size. What has happened in the past is small local governments choose essentially to ignore our ethics laws. They just make a determination that they don't have to follow them, and this would require most larger local governments with operating budgets in excess of $1 million that they too would have to file, and they have to follow the ethics laws that all of us have to follow. And again, this is not something that I necessarily sought out, but we had input from a lot of different people, and there are local government organizations that wanted that to be part of this bill. And finally, this is right out of the book Extortion. It's that with respect to campaign funds, that one of the ways to abuse the system is to lend your campaign money, charge your campaign a very high interest rate, and then have your campaign fund pay you back that interest rate. And in our law, we have no determination as to what that interest rate should be. This sets it as a 90-day bill treasury rate. And then also the one other change with respect to campaign funds is that right now when a donation is made in kind on disclosures, we're only obligated to suggest that it's in kind and not describe what that in kind is. This would require if somebody has lent somebody their use of their apartment or done printing for them, whatever that is, they would have to just describe it in a very simplistic way what the in-kind contribution is. I mentioned before that the original bill as filed 515 has not been changed yet. If we were to bring forward a committee sub, we have a lot of input from the Ethics Commissions. You know, after the fact, they've gone through the bill, and there are some specific things that they'd like to be changed that are relatively technical in nature. I think they're here today to maybe testify in that regard. And with that, I'll conclude my opening remarks.